Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to another edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lars Watson.
On today's edition, with all the fanfare of a bullfight, Barca announced their return on the big stage with the big boys and a big-name signing. We'll see through the smoke and the mirrors. Also, Benfica's fabled coach proves the old footballing adage is, you always remember the first time, and it's never as good the second time around. And in what's already been a busy transfer window, we'll take a look at the shape of squads to come. So, Andy, let's start off with Barcelona. Big press conference. They're back. Did you miss them?
Where have they been?
Yeah, that is a question, really.
Departed the league? Had they gone off somewhere else?
I mean, when, you know, there are certain stories that we have an obligation to cover on here. And we end up talking about a lot of Barcelona because they are the gift that keeps on giving. I have been particularly looking forward to discussing this with Lars, who is our, I guess, maelstrom against financial incompetence in the European game. And not suggesting that after Joan Laporta...
I am, after all, the son of an accountant.
Mr. McCorber.
Although, you never get the impression that Joan Laporta is, because...
Maybe he's just really hated his father.
This phrase, we're definitely recovering our status. Everybody in the world should get ready as we are, so we are back as big players in the transfer market. This is on the pitch, we should be saying. He's saying these words as they're presenting Ferran Torres, the €55 million initial fee purchase from Manchester City at 21 years old. Then, of course, when they get the press conference room with Matteo Alemanni, their sporting director, who has previously been sporting director of Valencia. So he's seen some ugly numbers before. And it kind of slips out what we all knew already, the fact that they can't register Ferran Torres yet because they've not got enough room on the wage bill. Now, this is all very going back to the start of the season where they sign Eric Garcia, Kun Agüero, Memphis, and can't register them. And it's right up till, you know, think of the transfer deadline as the last minute you can sign players. We're looking at when Barcelona can register the players they have signed, because that is the hole they're in, even after getting rid of the astronomical wages of Leo Messi. And yet they're doing it all over again, and they're back last.
Yes, they are back. They're back to doing the things they were doing before. gift that keeps on giving. Maybe all this giving is part of the problem. No, can I be slightly sort of when I contrarian, like towards myself? Let's go. You got to mix this up. I can't come on here and moan about these big clubs spending money they don't have. Like every time, it's like you kind of you can't play the hits. Actually. You got to do something.
Well, that's what people want.
I know, but maybe you know what? If you play Stairway to Heaven every time, you know it gets boring. I think even I have to acknowledge that there is an element of these clubs that you do have to kind of speculate to accumulate a little bit. Mm. And I think if we're going to make fun of Barcelona for making stupid decisions, I don't actually think spending good money on Ferran Torres is the worst thing they can do. Because he's a young player, he's someone who shows signs of being one of the sort of leading lights of this Spanish generation, someone who I think will play a big role in the Spanish national team going forward. And we are kind of coming towards the end of the pandemic, I suppose. You know, they can look towards a future where there are people in the stadium, and maybe the tourists can return, and you know, the finances of football will right themselves. And we can talk a lot about what Barcelona need to do to make a financial recovery and all of this, but the thing is, they need to have a good team on the pitch.
Yeah.
And they do have some of these sort of outlandish contracts that they signed. I mean, they are expiring, some of them, and they are getting rid of some of these people. So I think, as much as it's fun to make fun of Barcelona, because they've spent a lot of money on Torres, they say, we're back, but they can't actually register him yet. Like, it is funny, I get that. But I don't actually think this is the dumbest thing they've done. It does seem like it doesn't quite make sense, but there are reasons, I guess.
No, that's right. And of course, the fact that they've got another loan to pay the transfer fee from Goldman Sachs sort of gives them a little sliver of, actually, maybe we could get Erling Haaland, because you know they're
is
saying
that what this is all about.
What this is what they're moving towards. You know, they're like, we're in the mix for these players now. Now, to me, if you're Laporta, the minute you're sat down with Mino Raiola, you know it's not possible. You can borrow the 75 million to buy him for his buyout clause, which we think becomes active this summer. But signing Haaland will be expensive, not for the fee, for the wages and for what you're paying Raiola. It will be really, really expensive. Now, clearly, he would still be a huge signing for them. Clearly, to my mind, he would experience hitherto untouched realms of frustration, which we've seen little hints of at Dortmund, as the structure around him is not quite right, because clearly he has enormous standards and wants to go and win a load of stuff. I think there are a couple of reasons that Haaland to Barcelona won't happen, and I think that there are reasons on both sides, but both in terms of Raiola and Haaland actually wanting to win. Shifting those wages is still tough, and they are in a difficult position. One, because a couple of those contracts go on. I mean, you talked about, or hinted at, Ousmane Dembélé, whose contract is expiring at the end of the
and Coutinho,
the season.
Who will be leaving at some point.
Yeah, well, yeah. They'll end up still paying some of those wages
once
he's gone. The Ousmane Dembélé is the immediate one. Now, of course, they're trying to renegotiate. They're trying to negotiate a new contract with him. The difficulty is, obviously, it's not going to be cheap. The interesting thing that I saw Dermot Corrigan float recently is the fact that it might actually make financial sense for them to extend him rather than get out from what you believe is a millstone, because of the amortization of the original transfer fee. So you can stretch the, what, I guess, 27 million that's left of it over the extent of his new contract rather than shoving it all on this year's. I mean, in terms of what that allows them in terms of wages, that doesn't enormously help them. But it does show you just how incredibly complex the situation at Barcelona is.
Yeah, I guess that's for listeners who don't spend their lives analysing sort of finances. It's worth reiterating that a transfer fee doesn't get like written off on the books immediately. It gets written off over the course of time, over the period that the player has in the contract. So let's just for simplicity's sake say if they'd paid 50 million for Ferran Torres and put him on a 5-year deal, then that will appear in the budget as minus 10 million each year for 5 years. Which, as you say, Andy, when you then reach the ending bits of the contract, if you then extend it, then that gets stretched even further, what's left on it. So that could be a way of making that work. Also, just from a sporting sense, there is a player somewhere in Dembele, right? I mean, he is, if you can keep him healthy, and I think this is an original Andy Brassel joke, if you can buy him an alarm clock,
I'd stop using it if he did.
But there is an exceptional sort of, he has the pace, he's extremely good one-on-one, like there is something there.
Great feet. Yeah.
So he's maybe worth persevering with if they can find the way to make him make sense. Just on Haaland, since you brought it up, I agree with you. I think there's no chance it happens. But I think this is one of those things when it's both beneficial for the Haaland side and for the Barcelona side to pretend that it could. And with all the news around Erling Haaland, I would caution any listener, if you read any news article, certainly right now, saying, oh, he's going there, oh, he's going there, like they're all nonsense, because they don't know yet. They haven't decided. This is the thing everyone knows. What it seems to be what's happening is that Mino Raiola appears to be doing everything in his power to make everyone think this is where he wants to go. Like he's kind of keeping the channels open to all the potential clubs he could go to.
It's his job to provide him with options, isn't it?
Yeah, you drum up a market for him, and there's a lot of, in the specific case of Barcelona, let's say hypothetically, and this is just me speculating, this is not me having inside information, my feeling in the very significant Severson gut has always been that I think Real Madrid is a very logical place for him to go. And if you want that to be an option, it's not a bad idea to make Real Madrid think that you might go to Barcelona. Just to kind of encourage them to, you know, if you don't sign this guy, might go to the Catalans. You never know. So from Haaland's side of it, it's very beneficial that Barcelona are at least pretending they can afford him. Whereas from Barcelona's point of view, it makes the fans happy to read those kind of articles. It makes them seem big time, and it's like, oh yeah, we're back. So this is I think it serves everyone's purposes to pretend that this could be a thing, even though certainly as of right now, it doesn't make any sense at all.
And that pretty much answers Simon Edelston's tweet that he sent us asking how real is Barcelona's interest in Haaland. Is it possible?
I think the interest is real. I think it's possible but not likely. I guess just like if we're going back to the first period of Laporta and how he got elected in, it was, of course, by saying he was going to go and get David Beckham. Now, this is slightly different, of course, because David Beckham wouldn't even take his calls and his people wouldn't even take his calls. But, you know, their interest was real and it was possible but not likely. And it could end up with a similar conclusion, as Lars says.
Though that is an interesting thing to have in the back of your mind when it comes to like what you're hoping for and looking for with these big profile signings.
Who might get instead? Who's their Ronaldinho?
Yeah, because sometimes the thing that they think they want isn't the thing they actually need.
Yeah, thanks on that. If you're Ferran Torres, though, if you're Ferran Torres and you're thinking, hang on a second, you must be thinking, these are the dark arts of football. I go to Manchester City, and I'm going to be the next big thing. Doesn't seem to have worked out. So now I'm going to Barcelona. They don't seem to have bought me for the reasons that I thought they bought me for. They're operating the dark arts of football to use me as a leverage to get somebody else.
I'm not sure about that.
I don't know about that. I think they want him for him. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for them in the terms of the sort of image that they're trying to build, the image of the team they're trying to rebuild under Xavi, to get one of the best young Spanish players who, let's not forget, has rattled in a load for Spain in full internationals in not very many games so far, who both Pep Guardiola and Luis Enrique see as a centre forward rather than a winger. If he was your only option, I think that would be an issue because you're expecting him to produce at God level when he's not there yet. But yeah, I think it's, I agree with Lars. I think it's a sensible signing. Whether they should be going out and spending any money at all, I think is a totally different question. There are so many holes in that squad, it's difficult to know where to go. It's kind of like, you know, when you've got a lot of work to do and you don't know where to start, at least they're actually starting the work.
But no registration, no game.
No, because, of course, the only reason that Dani Alves, who was re-signed and looked pretty good, actually, in the cup win that was almost a cup shock at Linares, he looked really good in the second half of that, as we suspected he might. He's signed on the league minimum of €155,000 a year. And the only reason they could fit that on is because Sergio Aguero's retired. So we're looking at not just them trying to shift. Well, they're not trying to shift Dembélé. I still think he goes on a free next summer, maybe to Bayern. They're clearly trying to shift Coutinho and Umtiti. They're the ones. Memphis, maybe, I think, as well, could be one that enters the
already?
Picture. But it's going to be easier said than done, I think.
We're going to be talking about transfers later on.
Esta es la última del partido. Balón que le pegaba a Laz de Arraez. Este Dani Alves.
¡Gol!
¡Goloso! Dani Alves. ¡Goloso! Del Barcelona.
It's about turn, I suppose, in Benfica for the second time. Here we go again with regards to their coach, Jorge Jesus.
He's been told to go away.
Again?
Jesus is not wanted. it's an uncharacteristic thing for the Portuguese, usually quite big on Jesus.
I don't know if you saw the press conference from Jorge Jesus and Rui Costa, who of course is now no longer the sporting director, but the president of Benfica since the Luis Felipe Vieira reign fell apart. The press conference that they did on the ending of it, it lasted for about 2 minutes.
Mm.
They both had a quick word, thanked each other, thanked the fans, had a dutiful hug at the end. Didn't take any questions. It was absolutely painful. It was like the bit in The Office, you know, when David Brent has been made redundant and he's there looking really glum in like a pair of chicken legs or something similar and handing over that charity check. It was a little bit like that. It's a duty that no one truly wants to fulfill. And it's fallen to Rui Costa to do this because obviously Vieira's no longer there.
Was it a similar vibe to Roy Hodgson in the summer of 2016 when he didn't, I don't know what I'm doing here, to be honest, in the sort of post-Euro press conference explaining what had all gone wrong? Except I guess they didn't explain very much. It had to end.
And I think the big difference is Jorge Jesus was quite accepting of the fact that he was going. Now, it's been a difficult second spell for him because Luis Felipe Vieira, the previous president of Benfica, is under investigation for all sorts of financial stuff at the moment. And there are more revelations to come this weekend in the Portuguese media about the contents of various phone taps of Vieira and other sort of deals that he might have been involved in. Both inside and outside football. But he staked a lot on bringing Jorge Jesus back. And Jorge Jesus, let's get it right, was fantastic the first time. When he arrived in 2009, they quickly made him the highest paid coach in Portugal because they were desperate to keep him because he brought success. He brought fantastic football. And he was just bombastic and front foot. And you know, Benfica loved that. And you know, he brought an identity to Benfica for the first time in a really long time. However, after it fizzled out, and he went to Sporting, of course, went to Flamengo and did a brilliant job there, winning the league and the Copa Libertadores. And Flamengo are kind of at the nub of where it started, where the end started this time. No one was happy with the way it was going. Because remember, if we go back to the start of Jorge Jesus returning, he comes back. spends in fees alone during the pandemic over 80 million euros in a summer on players, which is an enormous amount anyway for a Portuguese club.
Unprecedented for a Portuguese club. I mean, no one's ever spent that much.
Exactly. And that is before we get to the big contracts for frees, like Vertonghen. You know, it was a really expensive summer. They'd slimmed down the Champions League qualifiers to one leg rather than two. They play Pauk away, have 10, 15 bad minutes, and end up getting, after he has stood up there in his introductory press conference saying, well, this time, let's do something in the Champions League. They're out of it before the season starts, which immediately makes the project look like a failure.
And the player who scored the winning goal for Pauk?
Yeah.
Andreas Zivkovic, who'd just been booted out of Benfica.
Absolutely.
Incredible scenes.
Absolutely.
The gods of football. The screenwriting credentials are extraordinary.
They were doing their thing. And then they don't win the league that's meant to be a shoe-in for them. They're not going to win it again this season, partly due to the result after he went, because he left the club in between the two Clásicos against Porto, both of which they lost, one to get knocked out of the Taça de Portugal and the other one in the Liga. So now that they're 7 points off the top, which is an absolute chasm in Portuguese terms. And then the thing that started it all is Flamengo. Now, in this era of, I know there's a lot of flight shaming in Norway, isn't there, Lars? Well, I'll tell you what.
I don't know. I've not been flying back there. It's very pandemic-y at the moment. I'm not flying anywhere.
It's definitely not a thing in Brazil and Portugal, because a delegation from Flamengo, they could have shown their interest in Jorge Jesus in whatever way they wanted. They flew three board members, including the president, over to Lisbon. And they said, right, we're not going to go back without Jorge Jesus, which is incredibly disruptive for Benfica. Now, I suspect as well, they probably had half an eye on, hang on, if they make a move for him, maybe we get some compensation and don't actually have to sack him. Because he was so unpopular by this point. Before this had even happened, there was a website set up by some Benfica fans where every time someone clicked the button, it would go like however many miles towards sending Jorge Jesus back to Rio. That's his level of popularity in the last couple of months. So then Flamengo come, they turn up to the Benfica game. So they're like looming there, the Flamengo delegation. And then when Jorge Jesus is not giving them an answer, they upset Braga by making an approach for Carlos Carvalhal, another one who's kind of on the line, on the hot seat. And then they end up really upsetting the Poland FA by taking away Paulo Sousa. Poland initially refused to let him go, and eventually do let him go. So here we go, Jorge Jesus without a job, and maybe heading for another job.
Was this
job
all
in
on the same trip? Because that's like a raid. I did this. The old Viking in me approves of that. There's just a group of Brazilian directors who just fly over to Europe. Like, we're not returning without a coach. We're just going to Ryanair it around the continent until we find some kind of coach.
None of this Zoom shit. I mean, it's all face to face.
Couldn't get the one in Lisbon. Fine, we'll go north to Braga. No, okay, Warsaw then.
But if someone was going to jump ship...
Where would they have gone after Warsaw?
That's a good question. But if someone was going to jump ship at an incredibly inconvenient moment, it was always going to be Paulo Sousa, wasn't it?
But I feel like having the big Portuguese brain... Well, you're not Portuguese as such, but you keep a weather eye on it, Andy, here in the studio. Why was he that unpopular? Was it just the fact that they lost a couple of games in the league? Because I'm just looking at the league table... Like, the Portuguese league is so brutal, because, like, Benfica, 16 games in, they've won 12, drawn 1, and lost 3, which seems like it. Like, that's not bad after 16 games. Problem is, Porto and Sporting are both undefeated. Yeah. So, you know, there's already a gap.
Yeah, but Benfica, there seems to be... Benfica have more money than either of them.
Yeah.
And have been spending more money than either of them. And the big problem from the Benfica fans that I listen to, and, like, from watching what's going on at the club, is that it's felt that, and this isn't really Rui Costa's fault, because this is a situation that he's inherited, it's seen as Benfica should have been going in one direction, because post Jorge Jesus, the difficulty was him, he never brought through young players.
Mm.
And, you know, you look at Bernardo Silva played one game before he was sold, or initially loaned to Monaco, I should say. You look at André Gomes, who got 14, 15 games for the first team. You know, Portuguese football fans understand that their best players are going to get sold, but they can't cope with like players from the academy not getting a chance. I mean, that's just culturally quite difficult. Now, you look at the spell post Jorge Jesus, when Rui Vitória, Bruno Lage promote players like Renato Sanches, João Félix, and they've got another good generation coming through. Gonçalo Ramos, who had his fallouts with the striker, who had his fallouts with Jorge Jesus, had not been getting the game time that many felt he should, while, say, someone imported like Seferovic, who's well paid, was getting game time. Seeing Jorge Jesus spend all that money and being brought back for all that money, because obviously it cost them to spring him from his Flamengo contract and they paid him an absolute fortune, it was felt that all the progress they'd made since he left was just going in the bin and they were just going in a different direction, and that they spent all this money and completely ballsed it up from that point. I mean, that's very, very difficult for Benfica fans to swallow. And the other stuff, the way that Jorge Jesus speaks to people, that's something that is being talked about more and more in Portugal. The way he talks to players, especially young players, a lot of fans are not having that. And I can understand that. And I think a lot of players are not having that. That's a problem. Of course, he kind of outed himself as a casual racist as well, when he talked about...
It's never ideal.
Yeah, and, you know, again, like, sort of...
What did he say?
He came out and he said about... I can't remember exactly what the incident was, but it was something about racial abuse, and he was saying, oh, people are always going on about that nowadays. Why can't they just get on with it? If you'd have asked him to say what I think it was, yeah, it might have been related to that actually. If you'd have asked him to say something next that an elderly racist might say,
yeah,
he pretty much did it word for word. And you know, there people have like forgiven him a lot of hubris over the years, but with that, it's just, you know, maybe you're a yesterday's man in so many ways, including some quite unpleasant ways that we weren't expecting. I mean, quite at that point, what you would have felt like if you were João Mário or any other black player who played under him, let down and disappointed, I suspect. Contra-ataque, a bola parece ter tabulado na mão do jogador do Benfica na área. Abertura para a esquerda, Rafa vai fazer o cruzamento, pode marcar, salve!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Of course, it's the January transfer window that dominates a lot of the football conversation right across Europe. And I suppose Europe is the focus. That's where the talent is, particularly talent that's likely to go to any of the big three or four leagues, isn't it? Anybody caught your eye so far? Interesting transfer news.
Well, actually, seeing as Lars is here, I wanted to... pump him for an in and an out of the MLS, really.
Okay.
Because I know you're an MLS watcher.
I am.
So firstly, Lorenzo Insigne looks like he's pretty much going to Toronto from Napoli when it gets the summer. And bearing in mind his age, the length of the contract, the fact he'll be getting paid three times as much as he would be at Napoli, who were looking to give him a pay cut. I think that's totally the right thing. The other one is young star, Texan star of US soccer, Ricardo Pepi.
Ricardo Pepi.
Coming over to Augsburg.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. What do you make of the pair of those?
Well, let's do Insigne first, because I've seen a few sort of adverse comments on it, like he's giving up on his career, like why would he do this? But I just think
he was
remember.
One of the stars of the Euro.
Yeah, he's a great player in Sydney. He's 30, right? And he's been offered a 5-year deal, is it, on completely wild terms, like and this is almost a throwback, because for the last decade MLS has kind of hasn't been the place to go for crazy contracts anymore. You know, the salary levels in Europe has kind of overtaken even what the sort of elite MLS performers earn. And if you're retiring somewhere to feather your nest, it tends to be the Middle East or possibly China for a while, even though before that sort of thing fell down. And we've kind of come out of this sort of, big money move to MLS thing wasn't the thing for a while. It is with Insigne. Like, the contract he's been offered by Toronto is wild. And it's certainly much more than he would have gotten what he's likely to have gotten anywhere in Europe. And you say he's a great player. I say he's a great player. But he's a 30-year-old winger. If he was going to move somewhere within Europe, he wouldn't be going to the top tier of clubs, I don't think. He's more likely to end up in some of the...
Are you sure about
that? No, I don't... I think the appetite for handing out long-term deals to players...
Not
over 30.
But
then you have to think of yourself, like for your financial future. If on the one hand it's a 5-year contract on a massive wedge in a city where you have a good lifestyle and a league that's much more competitive than it used to be on one hand, and on the other you can get maybe a 2-year deal at not one of the top tier clubs in Europe, but one of the sort of more aspirational. I mean, I think that's an equation that's... It's much more understandable to me, certainly, why Insigne has gone the way he has.
That's the thing. I think there's also a gap, Dotton, between, and I think we're maybe meeting in the middle here, you and I, on there's a gap between how much we love Insigne and how good he actually is. Like, he is an excellent player, and he was important for Italy in the Euros, absolutely. But I think there's a reason Napoli are trying to shave a little bit off his wages. And it's not just because they're spinning several financial plays. I think you have to look at how the contract's going to age as well. When Lars is talking about how old he is, he's as good as he's going to be at this point. And how good he is what a kind of A-minus player It's not an A++ player, is it?
So the point I'm making is that if you're not going
to throw the bag at it if you're Chelsea or
exactly
whatever,
this is the point. So if he's going somewhere in Europe, he's not going to Man City or Bayern or PSG. You know those offers aren't forthcoming.
He's going to a better Italian club, which is not where or a slightly bigger
Italian
club,
which is probably not what he wants to do. If it's somewhere else, it might be somewhere like Tottenham or like Sevilla or something, which great clubs, but you know.
Tottenham? What, you're saying that he would turn down, he chose Toronto over Tottenham?
I don't think there's any way in the world Daniel Levy offers him a 5-year deal at half of what Toronto are offering him. So the point I'm making is that it's a combination of great terms from Toronto, that's a huge part of it, but also just looking at what would you be turning it down for.
Usually when footballers are coming towards the sunset of their careers, they are still looking to play on as high a level as possible for as long as possible. Insigne seems to have thrown in the towel or have disregarded that sentiment and gone for the security of a 5-year contract.
Well, it's a growing league terms, isn't it? And in the short term,
would you go?
If you look at
To the MLS?
Totally.
Absolutely.
Over possible chance of playing the Premier League? Or
if you're being paid three times as much. I mean, yeah, really? You're not...
You would. Okay.
I'll tell you what changed my mind about it. Watching Carlos Vela Los Angeles, because he is one of the best players in the league. He's getting paid a fortune and he is having a great time. It's undeniably a way to enjoy yourself, I would say.
And I also, I'm a little bit sort of... I always think it's way too easy for us, and not just like fans at home, but us as well, to sit here around this table and talk very casually about giving up millions and millions of euros. Like,
absolutely,
because those are decisions we never have to make in that way. Like, none of us have ever been in a position where maybe I'd quite like to play for this other club, but for this club, I'll make, you know. We're talking about millions and millions of euros. So for you and your family, that's like these are financial decisions that are important and life changing. Totally. And it's too easy for us on the outside to just say, "Oh, it's only money." It's only money when it's someone else's money.
Well, what about Ricardo Pepi anyway?
What are we expecting from him? Became the Insigne segment, which it wasn't meant to be. Ricardo Pepi is kind of interesting. I would have said before that, ooh, he's quite interesting and good little pickup for whoever in Europe have bought him. But then the transfer fee Augsburg has paid is pretty wild. Mm. 17 million euros or so, or some such, is what's being said. Now, he is an 18-year-old player from Texas who made his MLS debut when he was just 16, and he's already played quite a lot of football. He's had something like 55 games in MLS at age of 18, which is pretty impressive.
What sort of a player is he?
So he's a striker. He's got quite a well-rounded physique. I mean, he's 6 foot one, thereabouts, 6 foot, 6 foot one. So he's not imposing, but he's got a good frame and he moves well. So he's quite well-rounded in that regard. And he's got an eye for goal. And he's got, I guess the phrase you use is there's a lot of good raw material there. Like there's the beginnings of a very good striker and very, very much unpolished, but someone who's been trusted to play senior football from a very, very young age. He's already made his debut for the US and scored a couple of goals early on in his US national team career. So he's someone who's taken to playing at a high level very well at a very, very young age, and someone you can see, you know, it's the raw materials there for him to be molded into a very, very good striker. I am very surprised he's gone to Augsburg for that fee. But of course, Augsburg, as I understand it, have an American investor sort of in the background.
And he'll play.
Yeah, and he'll go to and he'll play, and he'll be playing in quite an attack-minded and open league. Mm. It's not the most punishing league to be a young striker in, I think. But he's someone who... I suspect he's on Bayern Munich's radar for the future. I mean, he's actually trained with Bayern last year. Him and a couple of other youngsters from FC Dallas went over. So he's someone who's been on a lot of people's radar. Augsburg is a surprising destination, but it'll be somewhere where he can play football, and the raw materials are there.
It's a stepping stone. And you see that coming, happening a lot, don't you, in transfer windows that people are coming from, whether it be the African continent or South America or elsewhere, coming to a European, a lesser European club to use it as a stepping stone to go elsewhere. Ryan Seidel has sent us a tweet. And remember, you can send us tweets throughout the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotun Adebayo, at Andy Brassel, and at Lars Severston. So from Ryan Seidel, feel like you guys need to talk about Christoph Piatek's move to Fiorentina and what it means for Dusan Vlahovic's future and where he's going.
I don't mean to tear out our listeners. Of course, I only want to be friendly with our listeners, and Ryan is very much part of the listenership. He's actually written Golbay Christoph Piatek. He's not Golbay no more, unfortunately. He's had an extraordinary career in short career in Europe's top leagues, in that it was a surprise to people in Poland when he moved to Genoa. Even more of a surprise when he rattled in a load of goals. Half a season in, he gets sold to Milan, where he scores a reasonable amount of goals, but mostly from the penalty spot.
Was that a surprise at all?
They realised they want to move on. And he retains value. They end up selling him on to Hertha, ultimately. And he's not really established himself there through various different eras. And it's been difficult because they've been very unstable. They've gone through a couple of coaches. I just feel like his game is... he can make stuff happen in the penalty box. There's no doubt about it. It's great in the air. Decent finisher. But to me, it feels, you were talking about Ricardo Pepi at a much younger age, lacks a little bit of polish.
Mm.
I still feel that about Piontek, even though he's a little bit further down the line. He's one of those players who's going to end up having a fortune spent on him in cumulative transfer fees. I guess the David Platt of his time.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he's skipped a couple of the steps that you ideally need in your development as a player. When a striker like that turns up with a name like that, who people in Italy recognise, it suggests one thing, that you're shipping Dusan Vlahovic. I would suggest that he doesn't necessarily go in January. I think Fiorentina would like to sell in January because he's only got a year left on his contract when it gets to summer. But from the looks of it, he's not completely sold on Arsenal, who are the team who are most willing to put up the readies, and they are asking for a lot of money. So whether that means that Vlahovic, who's not a sulker, if they keep him for the second half of this season, he'll continue to score a lot of goals for Fiorentina, and maybe Piontek gets stuck doing that sort of peripatetic role that he's had at Milan and Hertha, which wouldn't be ideal for him.
No big names moving over the January transfer window. Can we confirm that? No big names.
Can we confirm that?
Just because you guys hear things that we, little people don't get to hear. any rumours? Because the rumours circulating.
It would be foolish to say never, because the football transfer market can be totally wild and irrational and bizarre things happen suddenly and without, warning. But the biggest names rarely move in January. We know that.
No, it's difficult to get done. Of course, the imponderable in this are Newcastle United. So what they do, especially if it gets closer to the end of the month and they haven't signed everyone they want to, it's going to be interesting.
Of course, in France, PSG and Lyon are amongst the teams that are looking to spring clean. And James Elliott has tweeted us saying, Nice sitting second in Ligue 1, title very unlikely this year. Are they holding towards a realistic challenge next year, though?
I don't know if you can talk about realistic challenges in a galaxy that includes PSG. So I think maybe it jumps the gun a little bit. As you know, I'm very interested to see how PSG shake out if Mbappe goes. I think that changes the dynamic a lot, possibly negatively. Going back to their January transfer window, what they're hoping to do is get rid of some of their deadwood. We were talking about how difficult it is for Barcelona to get rid of Deadwood. Of course, the impetus is not so great for them to do so with Paris Saint-Germain, but it's more difficult in the sense that their players are paid an absolutely heinous amount of money. And we're forever hearing how the likes of Levan Kazawa, Julian Draxler, who received extensions in the relatively recent past, they're having a great time living in Paris, and they're paid an absolute fortune. So why would they? So why would they want to go somewhere
gilded Deadwood,
less glamorous, to do more work for less money, much less money? So it's going to be tough for them. As far as Nice go, I like the way they're gradually building. I think if Hugo Lloris didn't sign again with Tottenham and went back there, that would be a huge signal of something happening.
Is there any suggestion that might happen?
Yeah, there is. I mean, he's still very attached to like where he's from. Mm. He's got a very nice house there as well. He's got family there. There's no doubt about it. You don't need to tell Hugo that. You're preaching to the converted. So if they could convince him, that would be something else. I find, in title terms, going back to James's question, for next season, you can't count them out while Christophe Galtier is there, because he is the best coach in the division. And I think the way they're building is very organic. But then again, they've got a bit of dead wood to get rid of themselves.
A better coach than Pochettino, then?
Yeah, for me, yeah.
For you, Zorloz?
Sacrilege.
Just say yes.
No!
That's the correct answer.
It's not.
Okay.
Nonsense. No, I'm joking, of course, but also not.
So it's that time when we turn to your culinary skills in selecting a game of the week each, please. Do you want to start, Lars? You got one?
Yeah, because I think I know Andy has... There's an obvious one for Andy, isn't there, on Sunday?
There are loads of obvious ones.
Okay.
So, I'm getting hungry, guys.
Fine, okay. Let's just, okay, well, I'm going to Serie A anyway, where, I mean, can we can't have games on the Thursday as game of the week, because most of our listeners might not get around to listening to this before then. So let's jump on to Sunday, because there is a full round of fixtures in the Serie A this afternoon, which is exciting. But it's a crucial couple of days, I feel, for Jose Mourinho and Roma, who are, you know... They're not in a great way, but they're still sort of kind of within touching distance of something. If they can have a couple of good wins now, then you feel that they could have a straight run towards maybe getting a Champions League place in the spring. I mean, they're not completely out of it. And they play AC Milan now this afternoon for a Thursday. AC Milan, who's kind of flagging a little bit and dropping a little bit behind Inter in the sort of title thing. But then on Sunday, they play Juventus. So they've in a couple of days, Roma are playing AC Milan and Juventus. Feels like pivotal moments for Mourinho, both because a couple of big swings in those games would be big for him. But we also know Mourinho, being combustible as he is, those big nights, if they go wrong for him, then suddenly he talks himself into trouble and it all goes weird. So key period for the Mourinho project at Roma, and both of them joint games of the week.
So whatever you volunteer for food is going to be replaced by a jumbo tub of ice cream if it doesn't go well in the first half of the second game.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah,
I'll give you the ice cream for free. What's the food?
I was going to be boring and go pizza, but then again, we're talking Roma, aren't we? And I'm very much the sort of Neapolitan pizza man.
Yeah, go for it. Why not? A margarita. So, yeah. Margarita's good enough.
I'm sure Romans would be fine for that. They won't be fine with that.
Yeah, they won't argue. What about you?
I'm going to go for Saturday night. I'm going to go for Real Madrid versus Valencia, because Real Madrid having a mini little bit of pressure put on them by them losing on the first weekend back at Getafe, which are very poor. Getafe really surging under Kike Sanchez Flores, away from the bottom, and Sevilla winning at Cadiz on Monday night. So I want to believe that there's going to be a title race. I want to believe that Valencia are going to go there and give them a game. Of course, there have been various injury and COVID absences for Real Madrid as well. The thing with Valencia... They're so unpredictable. And their coach, Jose Bordalas, who is a master of the dark arts, but I have such a lot of time for. The interesting thing with him since the opening of the transfer window, he's been saying, well, if Valencia want to be a big club, we have to sign some players, which I'm really surprised to hear from him, because he always seems such a modest, do the wrong things right kind of coach. Well, if you've seen Getafe play over the last couple of seasons, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting because these sort of power struggles always happen at Valencia. Why always Valencia? Anyway, if he's going to take on the board, especially in terms of getting them to put their hand in their pocket, well, one would suggest it's only going to end one way. It's going to be an interesting month for Valencia anyway.
Well put, Andy. But I have to say, this says an awful lot about how Lyon's season is going, that you've completely ignored Lyon PSG on Sunday and you've gone...
Yeah.
I mean, that is a diss. That's a diss by omission.
Never mind that. What you can eat.
It's something to be endured. Also, Valencia and Paella will make the January blues go away. And I can cook it.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.